Play ball! The boys of summer are back. On this episode of Vertical View, I speak with fellow podcaster and baseball purist, Mr. Dan Scott. Dan is the host of Grumpy Old Broadcasters, an old school approach to the new media world. Dan is also a broadcaster for a local minor league team, as well as for a variety of sports for the Furman Paladins. Today, Dan and I discuss Major League Baseball. We talk about our two favorite teams and the chances baseball gets to their postseason. We also cover minor league baseball, Furman baseball, and the NCAA college football season. There's a lot to cover in this week's edition of the Vertical View, so if you're ready, I know I am, let's get vertical. Well, Dan, I appreciate you joining us here on the Vertical View, and man, baseball is back. And I really want to know what your thoughts are right now about the Reds and the Cubs, both right now first and second in the NL Central. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, it's good to be with you, and I suppose we're going to find out if I'm a better guest than I am a host, which wouldn't take much if you listen to most people. you know my passion for the sport of baseball, Chris.
And I'm sorry for it.
It has been my favorite sport since pretty much the day I was born, the family I was born into. I didn't have another option, and I'm glad because I love the sport. Now, this entire season, is going to be something unlike we've never seen. It's basically a season where all 30 teams are in a pennant race. And it's a 60-game sprint if you get to play 60 games. You know, we've got the Marlins and now the Cardinals who've had COVID outbreaks, and that may take some of the games away from their total at the end of the season. But if we're able to finish it, this is going to be a season unlike anything we've ever seen. And, you know, the Reds and the Cubs are going to be right at the top of the Central, probably with the Cardinals, battling it out for that 60 games. And the schedule is weighted, so you're playing, obviously, the most games against your own division. So if we're able to complete the season, and I know that's still – something
that's
of a
big
question. If we're able to complete the season, I think it's going to be a fun stretch coming, you know, down the last week or so of August and into the entire month of September. I'm looking forward to it. I just hope that we can play the season to its completion and have a postseason and have a World Series, because I think the sport needs it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And you're kind of hitting on this. What I wanted you to comment on next is that both the NHL and the NBA both went to the bubble format. And baseball just decided, you know, we're going to just try to do it, and I'm going to air quote it, normal, and travel from city to city, ballpark to ballpark, and see what happens. And like you said, we've already had two teams who have had, at this point, minor to, you know, a decent amount come up positive for COVID. So what do you think the chances are that we get through this and they don't end up canceling the season?
I think if the players will behave themselves, they can complete the season. I just don't know how to put it any more plainly than that. You know, if the reports are true about the Marlins and how that outbreak started, then they've got no one to blame but themselves. There have been some similar reports floated around about this outbreak with the Cardinals, but their general manager yesterday or the day before — we're recording this on Tuesday, August the 4th, so in the last couple of days, their GM has has pretty much shot that down. He said he has found no evidence that that's the case, but he qualified it. He said, if it turns out it's true, it would be very disappointing.
Right.
I think baseball is a more difficult sport to bubble, quote unquote. I don't know that they considered playing the entire season in Arizona. They considered playing maybe the entire season in Florida, but with the COVID outbreak down there, they couldn't do it. Arizona, probably too hot, quite honestly. And the Diamondbacks ballpark being the only ballpark out there with a roof. So I don't know if they had much of a choice to do it other than the way they're doing it now. And it's kind of a reflection of society at large, Chris, during this COVID-19 pandemic. As much as one group wants to blame the other, and we talk about this being a possible vaccine and that drug not working, and are we going to wear face masks and not wear face masks? Are we going to gather? Can we go to restaurants? Can we do all this stuff? Ultimately, and people don't like to hear this in 2020, but it comes down to personal responsibility. And if the players will do what they're supposed to do, and that's go from the ballpark to the hotel, to the plane, to the hotel, to the ballpark, and do nothing else, then we'll get through this season. And you know, I saw a story earlier today that talking about that's exactly what the Philadelphia Phillies are doing, and they have been kind of a model for this. Is it fun for a player to live that kind of existence? No. Is it fun to lose your prorated share of whatever millions of dollars your paycheck is? No, it's not. So do what you're supposed to do. Take some personal responsibility, tough it out, and hopefully 2021 will be back to something resembling a regular season.
Yeah. So let's talk about the 60 game schedule. Like you said in the opening, you're essentially a baseball purist. So now we've got a 60 game schedule. We also have a rule change of National League is now going with the DH, as well as extra innings. We're putting a guy on second. So I'm going to call you a baseball purist. Where do you kind of fall with these rule changes and the shortened schedule?
Well, the shortened schedule, I don't think they had much of a choice, although I think they could have played 80 games. Baseball had an opportunity to take the lead, and because of the squabbling between the players and owners, they really blew the chance to have almost a month head start on everybody else when
right.
it came to playing and have sports television to themselves. And then you hear Commissioner Rob Manfred say on Dan Patrick after they had implemented the 60 game schedule, well, the schedule, no matter how much we negotiated, the schedule was never going to be more than 60 games. So which to me, and I think I went on social media after that and said, Rob Manfred may have just given the players union the ammunition it needed to file a grievance.
Yes.
For negotiating in bad faith. But that's another story. So, 60 games, 80 games, it wasn't going to be any more than 80. That's what I was hoping for. I loathe the DH. I understand why they're using it now to try and take some added stress off of the pitchers. Unfortunately, I think in the next collective bargaining agreement, we're going to see the universal DH, and I can't stand it. Worse than that, though, is this putting a runner on second base to start the 10th inning. For those who don't know, I do the Greenville Drive broadcasts when there is minor league baseball. This would have been my third season. And they have used this rule in the minor leagues for 2 years now, and you play baseball for 9 innings, and if you're tied, you go to the 10th, and suddenly you start playing softball or pinball,
right,
or whatever
it is
you want to use, and I understand the logic of, the longer the games go, the more it's going to wear on your pitching and this. Yeah, I hear those arguments. The number of games that go 16, 17, 18 innings are really minuscule. Yeah, really minuscule. I just think it cheapens the game. I think it cheapens the victory, and it makes a loss in that situation that much more painful. And coming down the stretch in a pennant race, if you fought tooth and nail for 9 innings and you're going into the 10th, do you want a pennant race game decided like that? I don't. I mean, we saw a game just 2 nights ago, Chris, where the guy who would have been up third in the 10th inning, you get 3 outs, didn't get to bat because of a strikeout and a line out into a double play.
Right.
We have cheapened the game and the outcome of these games by making this move. Now, that's my opinion. There are a lot of
Sure.
people who disagree with me. The national sports writers who you see that I follow on Twitter, they all more and more they're becoming sheep. Whatever Rob Manfred wants, they're falling in line with, and just about to a man, all of them love this. And I think even some of the players like it because, they don't want to be there 10, 12, 14, 16 innings.
Right.
But
Just get in there,
I
do my job, and get out.
personally, I think it cheapens the game, and I have a problem with that.
Well, we're chatting with Dan Scott from the Dan Scott Show. Also has his own podcast. And tell us the name of that podcast, Dan.
Yeah, it's one I'm surprised that you haven't been on yet. It's called Grumpy Old Broadcasters.
Well, I got the grumpy and maybe the broadcaster. I haven't gotten the rest quite yet.
Yeah, right. You keep telling yourself that, pal.
Well, you can follow Dan on Twitter at Dan Scott Show, as he's referenced to him being on Twitter. He's quite active, so be a good follow for you if you're in Twitter land. Dan, let's talk a little bit about, you brought up the Greenville Drive. Let's talk about the impact that all of these decisions by Major League Baseball have had on minor league teams, the towns, the ballparks. For instance, I was in New York for my summer vacation, and there's a little town there called Little Falls, and they play host to I believe it's a single A baseball team, and we usually head over there, Little Falls Diamond Dogs. And it was just sad for me to not see signs up there. Usually the town really rallied around the guys as they were in there for a couple months playing baseball. What kind of impact have you seen? Do you think we're going to see? I think there's probably going to be a ripple effect as this continues to carry on throughout the rest of this year, but likely even in the next year. As the Greenville Drive broadcaster, what have you seen?
Well, one thing I've seen is that there are some minor league franchises that are in dire trouble. Fortunately, here in this state, the Greenville Drive, financially, I think they're okay. I saw a story yesterday where the Charleston River Dogs have not had to, go after any kind of loans or anything like that to sustain them through not playing in 2020. So that's good, but the reality is that's not the case for a lot of franchises who have had to lay off people, who have had to go out and take on loans that otherwise they would not have taken. It's and the negotiations that are cranking back up again between Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball, in which Major League Baseball wants to do away with about 40 minor league baseball teams. I think maybe that decision probably became a little easier for them because I would imagine there are some franchises that are right on the cusp of completely going under. I mean, I don't know that, but you hear stories, you see things, you see remarks made on Twitter or other social media outlets about, you know, the devastating impact not having a minor league season has had, not just for the franchises, Chris, but as you mentioned, for the communities.
Right.
And if I can get on my soapbox here for just a minute, I really have a problem with Rob Manfred on a number of things, but I have a problem with him on this, because we should be doing whatever we can. And notice I put we in there because I'm a baseball fan and I'm involved in the game at multiple levels to grow the sport. And what do we see? Colleges doing away with baseball programs, minor league baseball probably contracting 40 of its 162 teams. All across the baseball landscape, we seem to be doing things, or other people seem to be doing things, to shrink the growth of the game as opposed to grow the growth of the game. And Manfred has this vision of bringing all of baseball at every level, and even softball, under Major League Baseball's umbrella, and calling it one baseball, and Major League Baseball being the decision maker for everything. Well, did you just watch the negotiations that took place for 2 months?
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to be part of that.
What kind of decisions are they making? And you know, the collective bargaining agreement is up at the end of the 2021 season next year. So they've got to negotiate a new collective bargaining agreement. You know, the good thing about it, Chris, is that if you know anything about the history of the game of baseball, and I think I know a little bit about it, the owners in Major League Baseball have been trying to kill the sport almost since its inception. And the game has always been more resilient and stronger than the people who were operating it. And my hope and my prayer is that that continues, because right now I think this game is in a crisis level that it has never seen before. I mean, the 1994 player strike that cost us the World Series and all of that acrimony, I thought was the low point for organized baseball, and there's no way that it could get any worse than that, and that the only place to go was up. And man, did it trend up, even until into the 2000s, up until the last 4 or 5 years, everything was going well. Attendance was up, ratings were up, revenues have been up and remain up. But with the acrimonious negotiations between Manfred and Tony Clark, the Players Association rep, the economic impact of the coronavirus, the intentional shrinking of the spectrum of the sport, I think this has a possibility of being a worse scenario than the 94 players strike. I hope I'm wrong. I hope something turns it around. And maybe a great 60-game sprint and a great postseason will do that. But I think we're on the precipice of a disaster here if we're not careful.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. And I'll just hit on the minor league programs and parks and the towns that each of these are in. I think that's where 75% of baseball fans fall in love with the sport. And for Major League Baseball just to kind of look the other way and let it go, or in a lot of cases to cut it, I think people are sick and tired of it. And I agree with you. I think baseball is in trouble. Let's stay with baseball, but let's switch to the NCAA and likely something that's going to be close to your heart here with Furman. Making the decision to terminate the program. I think at the time that they did that, they were only the second program. I think Bowling Green was the first to cut the program. I guess as the radio guy for the Paladins, how did you find out about it? How did it kind of shake out through the Department of Athletics there at Furman?
Well, first of all, I hope you and your listeners understand I have to be very careful, guarded, and measured about what I say because I'm employed by Furman.
Sure.
And so what I'm going to have to do is give facts as I know them and try to leave my personal opinion out. And I think everyone knows, even you know, my bosses at Furman know how much that baseball program meant to me personally, and how much my heart got ripped out when the news came down that it was canceled. In fact, well, as I answer your question, that'll become evident. I actually found out about it from one of the parents the day that it happened, about 5 or 6 hours before they put out the release. He informed me of the meeting that had taken place via Zoom, in which they were told. You know, I want to say Furman put out a notice around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. One of our senior associate athletic directors, as I found out later at the request of our athletic director, Jason Donnelly, actually called me about 2 hours before the release came out, not knowing that I already knew, but to give me a heads up so I would not be blindsided by that, because they knew how much the program meant to me and how much that I had worked for it, to try and build those broadcasts and my passion for college baseball. I mean, you know, you go in the span of just a couple of hours from being a 16-year veteran of broadcasting Division I college baseball to not being
right.
a college baseball announcer anymore. And so it's tough. But, you know, putting my personal feelings aside, now you look at the players and the parents and the position that they found themselves in. You know, fortunately, most of the players have found another home. Some of them high profile homes. We've had a number of players go to Power Five schools. One go to the University of Houston, which might as well be a Power Five school.
Right.
And so from that standpoint, you know, that's great. And it tells you the kind of talent that was being accumulated on this team as well. But, you know, there's still some players who haven't found a new home yet. And my heart just breaks for them. And Chris, I'll tell you, I have also been able to reserve a little bit of empathy for the folks who had to make the decision.
Sure.
Even though I did not agree with it, they know that I didn't agree with it and don't agree with it. I also know that it was not an easy decision, an easy situation that they were put in. And, you know, one thing that I constantly told our athletic director via text, even before I knew this was coming, because just in the midst of this whole COVID thing, when everything got shut down, this is a high stress time for everybody.
Right.
And every so often I would just send him a message saying, hey, man, I'm praying for you. And send him a little Bible verse with it, with some encouragement on it. And I don't tell you that, you know, so people will say, well, what a great guy Dan is. I'm telling you that because all of our leaders need prayer, whether it's at the local level or whether it's at the state level or whether it's at the national level. They need prayer. And sometimes you have to pray for them even when you're mad at them or you don't agree with decisions they made. You still have to do that. And so I was able to keep some empathy for the people who made the decisions, because I know it wasn't easy.
And those are great words, Dan. And especially as we talk more about NCAA and athletics, and in particular, as moving into trying to get a college football season going. So we've gone through the spring section where sports were seasons were canceled or stopped, and then a sport like baseball, in Furman's case, to be completely cut or eliminated. Now we roll back into the fall, and there's still hope that we're going to get this college football season in, and administrators are trying to make the right decision, even though what's right seems to change. I was going to say by the day, I think sometimes by the hour. I know there's going to be a discussion even today from the NCAA's Board of Governors, trying to give some kind of leadership to both D1, D2, and D3, but even to the Power Five and their ADs about this college football season. What are you hearing, again, at being at Furman, and with your kind of ear on the ground, you're trying to prepare yourself for this potential upcoming season. What are you hearing about the college football season and the chances that they play?
Well, I don't think there's any question the Power Fives are going to play. There's too much money on the table for them not to. And what's amazing to me, and this is going down another rabbit trail before I come back to your question, what's amazing to me is seeing all of these schools in the Power Five conferences that get these massive paychecks from television for football and basketball, and not to mention the revenues they get from ticket sales and everything else. And I know they have tremendous expenses, but they get millions and millions and millions of dollars every year. To see that these schools, many of them, are on the precipice of financial ruin if we don't play football this fall, it makes me wonder, okay, if they can't run a business,
right.
Yeah. Why should anybody else be expected to run a business when they're not making anywhere near that kind of revenue? It's just amazing to me that I know people cry poor mouth all the time, but I also know that there's a reality to this, at least in some part for some schools, that if they don't play financially, it could be an unmitigated disaster. Well, my question is, how do you get yourself in that position as a university that is reaping the rewards of the TV contracts and everything? Why have you not put money back for an emergency to carry you through a situation like this? Many people who are just your common everyday working Joes have tried to do and would love to be able to do. That's one of the things I don't understand. And of course, you start listening to things I don't understand, Chris, we're going to be here for a long time.
let's cut you off on that one.
Yeah,
let's step in something back there.
I think the Power Fives are going to play because they have to. The NCAA. Sure. This
what
is,
about the Furmans of the world?
Well, that's what I'm getting to. The NCAA Board of Governors, as we speak here on this Tuesday, August 4th, are supposed to meet again today, and there is some wide speculation that they are going to vote on whether or not to have fall sports championships. Now, that doesn't mean if they decide there will not be championships that conferences, you know, can't play on their own. In fact, the Big South has already said it's going to play. It's an FCS conference. I have every reason to believe, although I don't know anything for sure right now, but every reason to believe that the Southern Conference that Furman is in is going to have some kind of football season. But I think, you know, there are some conferences that have already canceled or postponed till the spring. And there are some that are kind of just, you know, hanging there on the precipice, I think, waiting to see what happens today. And depending on how that vote goes, we could have a lot more clarity. For a school the size of Furman, who doesn't have that massive television revenue, and other schools at the FCS, I think it becomes even more important financially to play, if at all possible, and if you can do it safely. And I know at Furman, you know, what I can tell you that I can share publicly is that, you know, every precaution that can be taken is being taken to ensure the safety of the athletes. We've had our football and basketball teams back on campus for 2 or 3 weeks now. Other sports are reporting this week and next week. And, you know, going forward for football season, I believe we have a plan in place for operating Paladin Stadium at as low as 0 capacity to 20% capacity, up to maybe 50% capacity, and different stages in between. So the work has been done. You know, the question is going to be, is everybody in the conference going to be on the same page as far as playing? And right now, I think that for the Southern Conference and other conferences are still questions that have yet to be answered.
I think there's a lot to one of the phrases or things that you said was that if everybody can be on the same
Yeah.
page, it seems as though the NCAA, who should be leading this, has actually caused more unclarity. It's not a word, but you know what I'm saying. By their delay in making this decision about the fall championships, as schools and conferences have decided to either be open or closed, online or face to face, there's much disparity all across the country, and so I think confusion is actually leading. And I actually think that the decision today by the Board of Governors, if we hear anything this afternoon or tonight, I think it's actually going to cause even more confusion because schools who have already decided that they're not playing versus the schools who are trying to decide if they're playing, and at this point that's the plan, it's going to create other issues. So one of those issues would be if, let's say, you're at a school up north who's already decided they're not playing, but you really want to play. Are you able to transfer right now
Yeah, I mean,
and play?
yeah, I, those are all great questions. And I don't know if you saw the article by Dennis Dodd on CBSSports.com yesterday, but he had a great article that basically lays out the reality of something that, you know, I've never been really good at the prediction business, as you probably well know. But going back on my old radio show on the Clemson station, as far back as probably 2004 or 2005, I predicted there would be a day in which the big schools, and this was before there was a Power Five, we were still in the BCS then,
Right.
that the phrase I used was the BCS schools, so now the Power Five schools would break away from the NCAA and form their own entity. And if you read Dennis Dodd's article from CBSSports.com yesterday, we're just about there. We are just about to that point where the Power Fives are going to say, you know what? You, Mark Emmert, as an individual, and the NCAA as an entity, have not provided the leadership. We are the ones generating the revenue that keeps you alive. Why should we continue to do that when we think we can do it better on our own in our own organization? Now, a lot of debate about whether they can actually do it better and if it'll turn into the wild, wild west and all of that stuff. But the bottom line is that there is a growing rift between the NCAA and the Power Fives to the point now where it's not just disagreements. And Dennis Dodd points this out in that article, they're actually becoming adversarial towards one another.
Right.
And, you know, if the Power Fives say, sayonara, NCAA, you know, what does that leave the NCAA? Well, it leaves the NCAA with a bunch of mid-majors and a bunch of FCS and a bunch of financial headaches.
That's right. That's right. After a spring where they lost a great deal of money with the lack of March Madness.
Yeah, and who are the TV networks going to follow?
Power Five.
Yep.
Well, that. So what a great segue. Like, Dan, it's almost as if you and I can read each other's minds.
That's a scary thought, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another talent that we've just unearthed. So recently you've seen the whole Pac-12 boycott, or at least that there's this wave that's coming from the West Coast. And even this weekend, Trevor Lawrence, of the Clemson Tigers football team, he chimed in and essentially tweeted his support for this player-led movement that's forming here in the Pac-12. What do you know about that? What have you heard? Thoughts on a possible boycott, at least right now, by the Pac-12 players?
Yeah, I know that it's approaching 400 student athletes from a variety of sports, not just football, who have submitted a list of demands, quote unquote, to the Pac-12 office. Some of them safety concerns, some of them, wanting money because they're the ones who put on the show, so to speak. And so there's a lot of conversation. I have mixed feelings about it. But to me, it comes down simply to this, and this goes back to the NCAA and to Mark Emmert and his predecessors. If they would have had the foresight to see what was coming as the television contracts and the revenue continued to grow beyond what anybody ever thought it could. I mean, the NCAA basketball tournament alone, just the tournament, not the regular season, just the tournament generates over $1 billion with a B as in boy
That's right.
dollars in revenue a year for the NCAA. And then some of that goes to the schools, obviously, and some of it goes to the NCAA for operational costs and everything else. But you had to see that coming, had to see the discussion, had to hear the discussion. I mean, I've been in the upstate for almost 21 years now. I've been in the media here pretty much the entire time I've been here. I hosted a daily radio show for 11 years from 2001 to 2012. We were discussing player compensation the entire time I was doing that, going back to 2000, and it's been talked about earlier than that. How could, again,
Right.
NCAA not see this coming and be proactive in offering a solution that would allow college athletes to reap some benefit from all of the money that the NCAA as an entity, the conferences, and the individual schools are making off of them? It's so simple to fix this before you get to this point, and yet, and
Yeah, here we are.
you can bring it down to your level and my level. We all get greedy, and we all get short-sighted. But
We all get comfortable.
we all get comfortable. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's my whole take on the thing, that the NCAA, the Pac-12, and maybe other conferences soon are facing or going to face a scenario like this, and it's their own doing because they did not recognize or refuse to acknowledge the reality of the situation that the college athletics now is not college athletics in the 1950s and 1960s.
No.
That the sheer amount of revenue generated mostly by television makes this a whole different ball game. And how long can you expect the players who generate that revenue to sit idly by while you're selling jerseys with their numbers on it and video games with their likenesses on it, and they're not getting a piece of the pie at all?
Right.
And I'm not saying there's an easy, simple solution to it, because then you get into the argument, Chris, of, well, do you only pay or provide some kind of stipend or whatever the solution is to the revenue generating sports. What about the Olympic sports that don't generate revenue? Are they left out in the cold? I know there's not an easy answer to this, but there is an answer.
Yep.
And the NCAA just kept its head in the sand too long. And now, you know, it seems like 2020 is the year of everything coming to fruition, including murder hornets. Now we've got, you know, it's all seemingly blowing up in our faces, and it's things that could have been prevented with a little bit of foresight by the people in charge. But I think if you look at the history of our world, the history of our nation, you could probably make the same argument in a lot of things that have nothing to do with the world of sports.
You got that right. Well, Dan, it's been great. It's always my pleasure to chat with you. You can listen to Dan on his podcast, Grumpy Old Broadcasters. And I love what it says here on your podcast. It says an old school approach to the new media world. Welcome to Grumpy Old Broadcasters. What a great lead in.
Cobb Oxford joins us. Tom Van Hoy is with us. Dory Kidd-Smith, who was a just outstanding women's basketball player at Clemson some years ago. She joins us on the podcast. She's kind of the team mom, we call her, she calls herself the seamstress for the band. That's a musical reference. But I would encourage people to check it out. It's on all, you know, wherever podcasts are available, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeart. I mean, it's all over the place. And if you look at it, we have had a pretty good run of guests.
Sure have.
Going back to about April, Jason Whitlock, who is no longer with Fox Sports. He's gone to Outkick.com now. But a national guy who, by the way, you want to talk about somebody who lays down some truth on Christianity in the world of sports?
Yeah.
Go listen to that. Hall of Fame broadcaster Marty Brenneman, former Braves pitching coach Leo Mazzoni.
Yeah. Episode 8.
And right on down the line, we just did one. You talk about minor league baseball 2 episodes ago with Eric Jarenko, the GM of the Greenville Drive. And he talks about all of these issues that we just discussed. Landon Powell was our most recent guest, and I think a lot of people know his story. Our next scheduled guest is the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Panthers, Mick Mixon. So, Grumpy Old Broadcasters, check it out. Love to hear from you. And
check him out. He's one of the best in the business. Join Dan Scott and his friends. I like what you said here, too, as they navigate their way around the current mess that is sports coverage.
Yeah. Or my life, or you know, just you could.
We could just talk about our own stuff, right?
Right, exactly. But Chris, thanks for inviting me on. I think you and I have done this enough together over the years where I knew this was going to be fun, and it was.
Dan, thank you so much, and you can follow Dan on Twitter at Dan Scott Show. You can as well on YouTube and Facebook at Dan Scott Speaks. Dan, thanks so much, my man.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, we have reached the end of another episode of Vertical View. I want to thank my guest, Mr. Dan Scott, the host of the podcast, Grumpy Old Broadcasters. You can also follow Dan on Facebook at Dan Scott Speaks, and on Twitter, at Dan Scott Show. If you love Vertical View, please subscribe, rate, and give us reviews on Spotify, Anchor FM, Google Podcasts, or any of the platforms that you listen to your podcasts. Also, for more information about me, follow me on Twitter, at @VE_executive. For now, I'll see you the next time at the Vertical View.